and I'm not sure. My first impression is that a properly decoupled capacitive sensing probe on an oscilloscope, I think, is going to give the most amount of information, because the way a... Let me drop...
KC2YAJ.
KC2YAJ. Start up with your name, sir, and tell me why you just signed in right now.
Good evening, Dick. KC2YAJ. Kilo Charlie 2, Yankee India Juliet.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Amateur Radio Repeater System.
Yankee India Juliet, what is your name, sir, and tell me why you signed in? Extremely noisy. I've got another question that we're trying to answer right now, and we're supposed to stop at midnight. So I'll put you on the list for next week, but I don't think we're going to get to you tonight. But getting back to you, Wesley, I'll look up that 4494A or 4194A. But I'm starting to say is that the way a Tesla coil works, the majority of Tesla coils have an extremely non-linear pulsed waveform applied to the primary, which sets the network into a ringing oscillation, which constitutes the high voltage coming out. Because there are such extremely non-linear primary and secondary voltages in turn involved, and a kind of a ring down takes place on each individual pulse in the secondary, because of that very non-linear, continuously changing amplitude and phase, maybe frequency waveform, many of the normal instruments that could analyze that operation almost do not work. So a vector network analyzer, a scalar network analyzer, a spectrum analyzer, all of these are going to give ambiguous results, I believe, when it comes to a Tesla coil. I think the thing that's going to tell you the most amount of truth is an oscilloscope, but even that requires careful setting up of the probes and proper calibration of that instrumentation. But that's a guess on my part. I've never really dug into what's going on inside of a Tesla coil, but it is a very nonlinear circuit the way it is normally used. I did in my youth see somebody set one up with a pure sine wave excitation, but that was a very rare one. It had a peculiar characteristic, which was somewhat desirable. You could put your hand into the output signal, and it didn't hurt, if you know what I meant.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Back to you, Wesley. N2XJN, K2LIW.
Yeah, at first I was thinking that I might have used the vector, the network analyzer, and then you actually told me that this might not work. At first, you need for the vector analyzing, you need a steady frequency source, and then you're analyzing what is coming on. The thing is that when I have a thyroid cylinder made from thyroids put together, and it's about 20 inches long, and then I'm winding the primary, and then I'm winding the secondary on it, what I need to do at first is tune it to 20 kilohertz and make sure that the secondary is actually working on it with the 20 kilohertz. I don't intend to burn any capacitors. I'd rather use the coil with its own capacitance and the inductance to tune to that particular frequency. And I'm trying to see the what is actually available from the tools. Let me drop. Well, one thing that I wanted to show to, at first, there is a device made by Hewlett-Packard that is actually containing spectrum analyzer, network analyzer, and impedance meter. But I found out that the portion of impedance is only working from 100 kilohertz, which is actually above the range, and just a kit to make it possible costs about $2,500, so I give up. Now the HP 4194, 4194A, the impedance gain phase analyzer, goes from 100 Hz to 40 MHz, which is absolutely what I need. And since it says that it's able to measure the phase, I believe at least that this one could actually help me to tune. With all of the devices that I have right now, I have one device, which is the Microtest, which actually Eric is trying to help me out with it. It does not have a working memory, so it does not memorize, but it has a frequency sampling. The frequency sampling actually works this way, that I can sample 1 Hz, 100 Hz, 200 Hz, and whatsoever, and have an idea in which frequency the Q factor of this coil is actually the biggest one, and the phase factor I can see from that meter. But as far as the graph, because the graph is set by the factor only up to 10 kilohertz, when I set it to 20 kilohertz or 200 kilohertz, it does not memorize, and I'm not able to see the graph. I need something that is visual, and this is actually color screen. It gives you the perfect, when you have a low pass filter, it gives you the perfect characteristic of exactly the area that it's supposed to be, allowing for the frequency to pass back to you.
AC2, QIQ with a comment?
Go ahead, Glenn.
Just a quick comment first, Wesley. There's something really whacked with your audio. I mean, it's really out there. Maybe you can look at what's causing that. But I was doing a little bit of experimenting with a couple of Tesla coils this week, and I was able to look at something that I think was interesting and might be helpful to you. If you're interested in looking at frequency, one of the things I was interested in was seeing what frequency of oscillation I was actually getting out of this thing. And one of the ways I was trying to couple to it somehow, without damaging any equipment. And I found an interesting way of getting a sample. And one of the things I did was on the secondary winding, I took a HP current probe, one of the higher frequency current probes, the AC current probe, just clamped it around the end of one of the turns of the Tesla coil, and it didn't seem to bother it too much. And I was able to get frequency measurements and quite a few interesting sampling measurements. But maybe that's helpful for you, I don't know, but it might be worth a try.
That's a beautiful answer. I have a current probe. I bought it for $1 or $5, I don't remember exactly, on a Harvest. And it's the Tektronix one. And I'm going to use it. That is an excellent idea. And, well, that is very difficult to say, but the principles of the project that I'm doing does have something to do not only with the frequency of the secondary coil, but it does have also with the thickness of the coil. There was a last week when I mentioned that if you have a coil made from three winds of the tube empty inside, then with a certain frequency, this cut off of that coil actually reacts with the factors of the eddies current, and it does have a really significant importance in this area. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, one of the things I should mention, Glenn, is that when you listen to Wesley's signal on the input, it's pure and clean. Through the repeater, it is very distorted. Some kind of unusual propagation is taking place tonight. Some kind of multipath-like thing is happening. And so you only hear that through the repeater, but on the input, he's clean. But as I see it, I guess it's possible to excite the primary of a Tesla coil in some kind of a conventional sine wave manner with something like a vector network analyzer, look at the S21, the transfer characteristics, into the secondary with some kind of a very light coupling device like your clamp-on ammeter on one of the turns, or some other form of minor secondary winding, you know, a couple of turns around the secondary that goes just to the instrumentation that looks at the response of the secondary, and then sweep it in a sine wave manner and look at the transfer, the S21, it will, in my opinion, show a definite peak in S21 when you scan through the resonant frequency. So you could be doing a pure sine wave sweep test of the Tesla coil, and I think that could help you predict what is going to happen under the real pulsed excitation that takes place under the normal operation. And I think you could peak it that way. What do you think, Glenn? KC2QIQ?
K2QIQ
in the TechNet?
Yeah, right on, Dick. I think so. Basically, getting a little current probe on there, you can get a good sampling. And, running, sweeping frequency in it to see how it reacts, it's definitely a better way to feel it, because wherever the resonance is going to take place, it's going to be dominant. It doesn't move. So it's kind of interesting, and I kind of proved that to myself, too, with a, first I wanted to take a voltage probe where I just kind of like shorted into a loop and brought it next to the Tesla coil to see if not, really interfering with the coil itself, just kind of like sniffing the field around the outside. I got a frequency measurement, and I was like, what if I take my current probe and just kind of clamp it on there and see if that really adjusts it at all? And now I had a two-channel scope, so I had my little snipper floating a few inches away from the Tesla coil, and then I took the current probe and clamped it on.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Peter, which
I was very happy with. I was like, getting a rather solid measurement here.
Active.
So I think you can find some success with that, Wesley. And, first, if you start off with an oscilloscope, just to get a basic idea where everything is taking place, and then you can see what the levels are, and then determine whether you want to plug that into some other form of instrumentation, as long as the voltages that are going into your equipment is safe. Back to you, Dick. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
Bernie, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I was going to suggest, Wesley, do you have a mic gain control on your radio? Can you lower your deviation? I'll give you a good example. Glenn had good solid audio. Dick sounds probably 3 dB hotter than Glenn, and Wesley, you're probably 6 dB hotter than Dick is. So it's very possible you're just flat over deviating the receiver. Also, Dick, are you in a position where you can look something up on YouTube?
Yes, I am. Go ahead.
Okay, go to YouTube. Use the YouTube search. Do not Google it, but use the YouTube search and look up this call sign, VK2LAW-R, Victor King 2, Lima Alpha Whiskey-Robert. Google that and you'll get a video. I'm sorry, don't Google it, YouTube it, and you'll get a video link for an echo link. That call sign, blah, 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 and in the description, it'll actually say the word TechNet, W2BL. Some of the international guys were playing around tonight, and this is actually a video coming from VK2LAW's shack as the TechNet was going on.
Very interesting. Okay, I'm going to have to leave you guys. Let's see if Wesley has got a chance to turn down his mic gain and see if that makes a difference. N2XJN, K2RIW.
I believe when I try to talk to my microphone from the distance, it's going to be a little bit better.
As I see it, Bernie, he turned down his audio, but it's still distorted. I'm hearing the sound of what sounds like multipath. In other words, the FM signal is beating against itself after a delay. I recognize that sound. Maybe you've got another opinion on this one. Over to you, Bernie.
Now, I don't have another opinion on the sound, but I do know that this has been going on for a couple of weeks. So it's not I'm going to discount atmospheric conditions. It's something highly unique to Wesley. It's the Wesley sound, I guess.
I have a possible idea on this one.
On the a monitor and on another radio. And it's crystal clear, but it's...
Wesley, do you have a spectrum analyzer where you can look at the output of your radio?
Yeah, I have it. Yes. I can do that. Hold on. Okay, you talk and I'm gonna prepare myself.
I think what's possible is you may have some products that are coming out of the radio that are like at some other frequency right now that are really disturbing the repeater, where if Dick is tuned on with his filter on the input side, he's not hearing the adjacent noise, but the repeater might be, or it's something that might be beating against the one of the filters in the repeater. And it's what it's, because even when you're not speaking, it's actually creating a distortion noise.
I think it's the L square waves instead of sine waves. I'm listening to them direct. I didn't get a chance to look at it on a scope up here, but the repeater has a DSP in it, guys, and if it was over deviating, it would just like pop right out after about about 7 kilohertz. So it's not his level is a problem, but I think the tone is causing some beating problems.
The winds do you have to put in the second of the Tesla coil in order for the Tesla coil work on 20 kilohertz? How would you do that?
It does pop out every now and then.
You know, I could turn the PL off and you could turn your tone off and we can see what it sounds like. Hang on a second, my friend. Let me turn the PL decoder off and repeat it.
K2YOWA2YY.
Whoops, I'm sorry, I was daydreaming. Who just called me?
K2YOWA2RYY.
Net time.
Yes, Joe. Sorry about that. I was daydreaming when you called before.
Do I have your attention now?
Yes, go ahead. We'll also be getting Wesley coming back in a minute with his non-PL'd transmission.
Okay, I'm here. How's it going down?
Still the same, Wesley.
Did you look into that problem we were talking about on the radio the other day?
Yeah, Dick told me that my signal is crystal clear. I check it on my secondary radio and on the monitor, and it looks good.
KC2WGB, Wesley, can you try your car?
Oh, can I try my car? It's a good idea. Thank you. I'm going to my car right now.
All right, I'll stand by. I'll listen.
Okay, well, check your email on offline. I did get a chance to troubleshoot it.
You did not get a chance to troubleshoot it?
Negative. I did get a chance. I documented it in my email. I was not able to duplicate your suspicion.
Because I'm looking at my read input right now during the tech net for the last 25-30 minutes, and I hardly saw a PTT break, even though I could hear a squelch crash on the 2-meter machine. In that amount of time, I didn't see the PTT line go down, and I don't think it's my node because I connected another reflector. I don't see the same effect.
Okay, I'm in the car.
Okay, well, our node is definitely getting COS activity up and down, and it's tracking with the squelch inputs on the repeater.
Okay, N2XJ, and I'm in the car.
Sounds good from the car, Wesley. Sounds good from the car. I don't know if you're just out of the multipath where you're transmitting from, how far away you are from your existing antenna, but you sound great on the input from your home. No distortion at all, crystal clear. And from the car, you sound good.
Yeah, John, did you try to hear to listen to me without the repeater on the clean part?
Yes, I listened to you on 250 with and without the PL on both, and the 850 also. Plus, I'm looking at my monitor scopes, and on the input, you're perfect.
Yeah, are you talking about my car right now? Because I'm in the car, or are you talking about my house?
Net time complete.
From the car, I have no problem. You sound like you usually sound, nice and clear. From the home, on the input to the repeater, all the instrumentation here shows you're doing a fine job. But what's happening on the output of the repeater, I have no idea. Dick may be right. Maybe it's multipath just from the different locations between your car and your antenna in the house.
Yeah, Wesley, why don't you hook up a little portable antenna to that radio and just put it on your window?
That is a good idea. Gonna, not today, it's too late. Tomorrow I'm gonna go to the second house of mine and find out. I should have some antennas. And if not, I'm gonna make one like a small depot. Thank you for all of the information. Glenn, if you're still there, or Eric, yeah, if you could give me some help with this, with this, what I ask. If I want to tune the second jar of the Tesla coil to 20 kilohertz, how would you do that?
If you wanted to do what at 20 kilohertz?
I want to have a second jar of the Tesla coil resonate at 20 kilohertz. I'm thinking about buying additional equipment. Yeah, it's money to spend. If I don't have to, I don't have to.
We ought to see each other and talk about that.
See, Eric, the microtest, it does work to 200 kilohertz, and it has the graph. The problem is that since the memory doesn't work, and the factory default is 10 kilohertz the most, on the graph it goes only to 10 kilohertz. If I go to, let's say, 200 kilohertz, and I go out of the program and then try to log into the graph, it's still reading in 10 kilohertz, and that's my problem. So if I don't have this, I was thinking about the spectrum, not the spectrum analyzer, the impedance meter with the screen, that's Hewlett Packard. You know, it's a $6,500. I just don't, you know. I'm looking for a way to have a perfect ability to tune something that is not necessarily linear. Back to you.
Are you talking about using that box that only half of it works?
Yeah, yeah. This box is supposed to go to 200 kilohertz. If the graph was able to show me 200 kilohertz, I wouldn't need to buy any additional equipment. I would see exactly where the deep is and where the frequency of resonance is. Back to you.
Yeah, well, you know, you only got half of that box working. There's something wrong on the micro bus that's only allowing you to access the boot. It just doesn't access the rest of it. So, you know, it's probably like a 74376 to one of those kind of chips is dead, or it's hanging up the bus.
Well, one of the things that might have happened is that the radio was, not the radio, the device wasn't closed for a long time. The battery died, didn't show the battery, so it didn't show the clock working. That's what happened. And I remember when I switched that, the clock started to work, and I started to mess up with the battery, and right now it's not working. Well, whatever. But as far as the memory, does the memory have anything to do with the battery? Back to you.
I'm telling you, Wesley, the way that microprocessor works is, okay, it addresses a specific address, okay? And it gets to a certain address, it sees nothing. So, if you look at the way it's, just from looking at the way it's physically laid out, the boot ROM chip is probably up in the FOOs based on that particular chip. The storage is down at a lower address. And what's happening is, I mean, if I just put a scope on it, I could probably show you that it's not addressing some of the chips in there. On the part of the box that you're interested in having work, you know, yeah, the battery is only there to keep there's a static RAM. I think it's what it's in 8036. And all that battery does is it keeps that static RAM with a BIOS on it, so it remembers. But that's not the problem. The problem is it never gets to address any of those chips.
I understand that. I do. Well, if you have a chance and the time format, I would appreciate. Did you got just the schematic, or you've got the manual as well?
No, they gave me a very hard time. They just want to sell you another one. Look, there's a couple of PALs in there. If the PALs aren't screwed, you can fix it. If the PALs are messed up, then you got a problem. Then, it really, you know, I don't know if I'm going to have the patience to sit down and figure out what the PALs, you know, well, how the PALs are programmed. That kind of reverse engineering can be done, but, you know, I got better things to do with my life.
I understand that. No, I understand that. Well, if you can, you can. If you cannot, you cannot. What can I say? Back to you.
Yeah, I'm going back to what I'm doing. Yeah, you should try an antenna someplace in the house. Because I don't think it's the radio. I think Nick's right. It sounds like a multipath. It's just the air antenna on your roof is just in the right place. But, N2XJMK, to you.
Okay. And Eric, the question about the tuning, that means you have a primary of the transformer. I mean, what is it? It's a transformer. The Tesla coil is nothing more like two windings on, and then you need to have a secondary on the particular frequency. How would you do that?
You're talking too fast for me.
Okay. My question is, you have a primary and you have a secondary. You want the secondary to be at frequency of 20 kilohertz. How would you do that?
Well, you're asking me, you have a primary. The primary is going to be running at 20 kilohertz. Secondary is going to be running at 20 kilohertz, yes?
Well, it doesn't matter what the primary frequency is. Let's say, okay, you want to have a 20 kilohertz on the secondary, and you want to find out how many winds you have to put on that winding. Now, since everything is on the thyroid and it's not necessarily linear, it's hard to predict or hard to calculate that. But how would you do it?
Well, the frequency of the primary and the secondary are going to be the same. If there's anything you want to calculate, because, I mean, it's not a resonant circuit, it's a transformer, okay? It, you know, the ratio of input turns to output turns, what you're really talking about is how much voltage do you want coming out of the secondary? Not what frequency. The frequency is a function of what you stick into it, okay? Whether it's efficient at that frequency, that's another story. That all depends upon the core material that you're talking about. But it's a transformer. Ratios of the primary versus ratios of the secondary. Simple math.
I understand that. But then what's happening is I put on the secondary, let's say on the primary I have 130 winds. On the secondary I put two winds and I put the light bulb on it and I have a perfect lighting. Then on the secondary I put, instead of two winds, I put 20 winds just to increase the voltage. What's happening is the voltage is there, the current is gone. The light bulb is not even trying to do any size of light. Back to you.
Yeah, have you measured the voltage going into the light bulb? And it's just a high frequency. Okay, you know, now you have to look at it in terms of a resonant circuit. Is the light bulb acting like a short or is it acting like an open? Do you have enough power there or is the light bulb just loading the circuit down that you've got no voltage happening?
Well, let me put it this way. If you have two winds on the secondary and you have a light bulb with the full power and then you, instead of two winds, you put 20 winds. And then you put on the voltmeter, you have much higher voltage, but the current is gone. And it doesn't work with the light bulb. Back to you.
So open circuit, you have a lot more voltage, but when you put the load across it, it disappears. So it sounds like you're having a mutual conductance problem, yeah?
Yes. What I'm trying to do is, if you could explain me, if this is really the mutual conductance problem.
Yeah, well, if we were talking about 60 hertz and iron, for a core, okay, and the diameter or the thickness of the wire, which is going to determine how much current it's capable of dealing with, and how tightly or loosely coupled the primary is from the secondary.
Oh, that's a good information. That's a good information. Okay, I'm using 12-gauge wire on both. That means as a secondary, I put two winds, and it's 12-gauge wire. And the light bulb is giving me the light. Now, when I replace that, and on the secondary, I put 20 winds with the same 12-gauge wire, the voltage is there, the current is gone. Back to you.
Okay. You know, we haven't talked about frequency now. But, you know, you're also talking about, if you're talking about something that's at 20 kilohertz and you're using ferrite, okay, there's a lot of factors that are going into it. I mean, have you actually calculated what it is in terms of resonance? Because when you put the light bulb on there, you don't see the voltage anymore because essentially it's too much of a load. Right? Why? What is the actual resonance of the circuit that you've got there? At 60 hertz is easy. As you start to go higher in frequency, things change rapidly.
Yeah, Rick, that was you who said you have a 20 kilocycle on the primary, then you have a 20 kilocycle on the secondary, the transformer. So, what resonance are you talking about? That's what I understand that you try to advise me. Then, now, when I said the light bulb is lighting and then in another instant the light bulb is not reacting, you said, well, so what is the resonance? Everything that I'm asking for is for one single thing. Spend $6,500 or do not spend $6,500. That's why I'm bothering you guys. I need your help. Back to you.
Jim Wesley.
You're right. Point of the matter is, if you make 10 turns of your wire, okay, that makes the wire X long, okay, which is going to have a resonant, an inductive reactance at a particular value because of the length. Now, if you add more turns to it, now we're also not asking how you've made the turns and whether or not it's a single layer or it's laid on top of each other. You've changed the inductance to the whole thing. So, you know, it's 2 pi over LC, 1 over 2 pi LC is going to change because now you've changed the inductance of it, so the resonant frequency of that circuit is going to change. Let's pick up the other station.
Wesley, quick question was, if you double the primary winding and leave the secondary alone, you're saying that basically the bulb does not light. Did you try putting two bulbs in series, which would actually bring you down to the same bulb that you started with? Actually, it would be looking at that at least.
No, I understand what you're saying. Well, when I connect two light bulbs in series, I'm increasing the resistance of the load. If I'm putting this in parallel, I'm actually decreasing it. And since the two bulbs are the same, then I'm decreasing of 50%. But I understand that. No, it's not the primary. It's the secondary. Primary is the primary. I can make primary whichever way I want to. It's 20 kilohertz that is coming in from the generator. It's a DC the generator. On the secondary, when I put two winds, I have a beautiful light. And when I put 20, try to make the voltage higher, then the current is gone. And you're right, actually. It's a difference in inductance.
Eric, what I think Wesley was asking you before is he was trying to determine how he could figure out the resonant frequency of the secondary coil, that output coil. That's what I think he was asking.
Impedance, phaser, how do I call it? I forgot, I have it in the computer. Impedance, analyzing phaser. And it's $6,500. If I don't have to spend it, I don't spend it. It's just that it's going to be gone. That's why I'm asking you all of these questions. Eric?
there's a number of ways you can do it. Because you're using a core, and you have to know what the value is for the core, you can, based on the wire, the thickness gauge of the wire, the number of turns, you actually can open up the ARRL handbook and get an approximation of what the inductance is. But, you know, maybe you really should be looking at it from an AC point of view. Rather than thinking about reactance, think about, or impedance, think about admittance. And it might become a little more clear for you. But you could just take your AC device and try to measure the inductance of it sitting on the core, but if you want to be accurate about it, you have to ensure that you're operating at exactly the same frequency that you're making the measurements at, because change the frequency, all bets are off.
Yeah, well, Eric, the device that you saw in my house, because it has a sampling works. The graph doesn't work because it doesn't have a memory, but sampling works. So it's 10 hertz, 100 hertz, 150, whatever, but when it comes to higher ranges, it's 50 kilohertz difference. So I have 50, 100, 150, 200 kilohertz. And what I find out is that the quality factor, let's say, goes to, the best one is at 20 kilohertz, but then the quality factor drops after that. So that's one of the indication. As far as the inductance, the question is, if I have a resonance, should I have the biggest inductance, or should I have how these two factors, Q factor and the inductance, should look like at the maximum best situation? Back to you.
All right. Listen, I really have to go. That's one thing. But, I mean, I know you're reading what the instrument says, but have you bothered to measure and see if the instrument is actually doing what it says, or you're just taking it at its face value?
It is showing me the face, the angle. Back to you.
All right, the point of the matter is if you're operating at 20 kilohertz and that's what you want to measure, and if you've hooked up a counter or another scope to it to see that it's actually sticking out 20 kilohertz to make the inductance measurement, not that we know that thing is accurate, because we know it's broken to start with. So, I mean, once you know what the value is and what the frequency is, and you can figure out what the resistance is and the load, you can calculate the capacitance and find out what that is, and then you'll find out what the resonant frequency of that particular winding is. You may find that the two turns, or the 10 turns rather, is more resonant to the frequency that you're operating with than the 20 windings or the 10 windings, however many windings that you have.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. And the last question, because you got to go. You have the, I believe you're familiar with this device. Impedance, phase analyzer. If I have this device, would it help me or would not? Back to you.
I think what you really should do is go back to basics and work it out on paper and forget about all the fancy instruments. You know, it's just sort of like I don't mean to say it's a lazy man's way of approaching it, but, you know, what you're doing essentially is put a couple of windings on it, measure it, and see what happens, as opposed to actually calculating what's going on, because you can calculate what's going on, and then from there, you know, make your assumptions based on what you get as a result of your calculations on paper, and confirm them with the instrument, as opposed to doing it the other way around.
I was trying to do that. The thing is that if I see exactly on the scope, because it has a big color screen, what is the frequency, then that would be the best approach to that. Am I right or am I not completely?
Now, you can work it out either way. You can either come up with what the inductance and capacitance of the circuit is and figure out the frequency from that, or you can know the frequency and figure out, using simple algebra, what the inductive value is or what the capacitive value is. The only thing that you're not going to be able to do is figure out the phase angle between the two of them, without knowing the actual values of the two components that you're working with.
So you're saying that the phase value that I will see from the scope would be forcing one?
Well, I'll be very honest with you. I wouldn't put any faith in that instrument until it works properly. Just because it half works doesn't mean it really works. So, you know, if you want to look at it from that point of view, you can figure out what the phase angles of each component is and how they're wired together. Because if you think about the light bulb is three things. The light bulb is not just resistive, it's inductive, and it is also capacitance there. Okay? I mean, most components have all three of those, and how those values intermix with each other, it depends upon how you put them in the circuit.
Oh yeah, that's completely true. And apart from that, the light bulb, when it's hot, it changes the parameters. And the parameters are absolutely not the same as when it's cold. Back to you.
All right, if you want to take and get rid of some of the variables, rectify the stuff before you stick it into the light bulb.
Well, actually, I'm dealing with the DC current. It's a square wave. Of course, from the other side, I'm getting kind of AC. Back to you.
Yeah, well, you know, the light bulb is just a, excuse my expression, BS indicator. You know, if you want to do this right, use a purely resistive load. Okay, purely resistive load. And a voltmeter and an ammeter and see what you're getting, whether or not you're actually having some efficiency in terms of generating stuff. The light bulb is good for YouTube videos. It's not really good for making any kind of subjective measurement other than light bulb lights up.
So you're suggesting use one nice reference, or not a reference, but good resistor. And if I don't have the special, what company does make it? I forgot. A resistive load, and then start from that. Back to you.
No, you know, all I got to say right now is 7-3 Wesley, I got to go. And I will talk to you about this some other time. But you want a non-inductive load to play with. And that's a good place to start. Have a good evening. NTRXJM, KE2J.
Thank you, Eric, for all the information that you gave me, and I appreciate it. Have a good night. John?
Yes, Wesley, I'm still here. That's a good idea, non-inductive load. Get a nice carbon resistor. You've got the instrument to measure resistance. And that'll give you your inductive load, and maybe you can make some measurements with that.
Actually, I have one.
K2YO.
I have a beautiful one. When I was in a harvest, for $5, I picked up the one section. It's a huge device. Four resistors. I believe each one is... God... either 8 ohm or 16 something ohms, and is nicely made with mica inside, so I can use either one or all of them. Actually, it's in my living room. I never tried that. Back to you.
Might be a good start. I think Bernie was in there. Y.O., are you in there, Bernie?
Yeah, guys, real quick, Eric, are you still around? Negative on the Eric. When he goes clear, he's clear.
Okay.
K2YO's clear.
Okay, Bernie 73. So you're in your living room, Wesley?
No, I'm still in the car. See, that was a problem to understand me. I went to the car. I'm in the car right now, back to you.
Well, I'll tell you, in the house, I could talk to you on Simplex because your signal comes in here, you boom in here on the repeater input, so I know I could talk to you Simplex. No, you should sit in your car.
Hey, we can try that. I believe it's going to be a problem. But the time is almost 1 o'clock in the morning. I got to wake up in the morning. And It was very, very good evening. And thank you for helping me out. You're a great man. No, I'm not trying to compliment you. It's my feeling. Back to you.
KC2I,
station recognized. Wesley, you have a good evening. You're a great guy, too. Love talking to you. Very, very interesting tonight. And talk to you tomorrow. Maybe we'll see how your radio works on a repeater tomorrow. Maybe this multipath will be gone. Station, breaking station, pick it up.
Yeah, KC2I, I just wanted to know, just a quick question. Does anybody have any feedback on the HD spectrum analyzer of the 8568? I'm looking at it on eBay. I'm not
getting any feedback on that. 568? What is the model number? I have 3585.
No, this is the 8568B as in boy, 8568B.
I own the 8569B. I'm sure it's similar.
Is it a good unit?
It's a little yours. The one that is an excellent unit. I paid a lot of money for it many years ago, and it's still working fine. Never had a bit of trouble with it.
Okay. That's the one that comes in two pieces, right?
Megahertz too. So that's what you want to look at. You want to look at that full spectrum. But before I spend that $6,000, I'd hang out first, see if you can get that other piece of equipment fixed, and maybe you can save yourself some money.
Yeah, the only thing is that the time is running out, and I'm gonna talk to the guy and try to lower down the price. This would be, if I buy that, that would be the most expensive piece of equipment I ever bought in my life. I've never spent that much money for the piece of equipment. Of course, I could do it a different way. I could put myself on hold and just wait for the year and find out if something like that comes out and try to bid on it. I'm trying to progress with my project. You know. And the last time when I was talking to you, but let me jump. There was another gentleman that we spoke. Oh, there was Glenn. We spoke about the Tesla coil, and I was trying to relate to the video of that young Russian guy, and you know, try to present that video, particular to Glenn. He approached me 2 days ago, and he said that. He was actually kind of encouraged by me talking on the Tesla coil, and he started to experiment with a square coil. Back to you.
Yes, I was on the radio that night. He was speaking about, I think it was in the daytime. He said he was doing those square toroids, and he got it. He built a small one real quick, and he was getting like 10,000 volts out of it, I believe he said.
Yeah, well, all I'm trying to do is speed up the process. All I need is any tool, possible tool, or any advice, possible advice. I need to have ability to understand and fight with the problem that once I put more turns into the transformer, which are actually, Eric said, you have a 20 kilohertz on the primer on the transformer, then you're supposed to have a 20 kilohertz on the secondary. So there is no resonance circuit. But then I told him that I put a load on it, and he said, well, you're losing resonance. Now it's just kind of confusing. I understand the guy has absolutely great knowledge. I believe that I have some of it. At least I'm able to keep the conversation at the proper level, you know. but I'm nowhere near by these two guys. Back to you.
Yes, he made what he was saying sound inconsistent with what you were saying and what he was saying himself. That was confusing. But also, Glenn was talking about the coils one time, if you remember. By adding the coils, you are definitely going to change that sweet spot that you find with your equipment on where it's going to trigger, where the cue is going to move. Every time you make a change, it's going to affect something else. So you're really digging into the research, the nuts and bolts of, yeah, you could do it on paper and then refine it with the equipment. You could, either approach would work, but I think you'd rather work with equipment because it's real time.
Sitting 2-3 days on something, finding some results, then the very next day after that, I go to that and I see quite different results. And I try to figure out what the heck is going on. What did I screw up? Or what did I, you know? Then today I was actually trying to make another video, and so you would be able to, you know, see it. And I've noticed that by moving that two winds or three winds coil along that primary coil, I'm changing not only inductance, but I'm changing the Q factor, the quality factor of the coil rapidly. And then I saw...
I think we lost the repeater.
The idea that I have a network analyzer, but...
set. Clock, not set. Ready.
Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1718, with the release date of Friday, July 16th, 2010. To follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. An appeals court strikes down the FCC's 2004 ban on indecent language broadcasting on the airwaves. The next global amateur radio emergency conference to take place this fall on the island of Curaçao. Hams in Spain get called out in back-to-back emergency communications exercises. And Amateur Radio Newsline announces the 2010 Young Ham of the Year. Find out whom it is on an expanded Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1718, coming your way right now. From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD. A federal appeals court has struck down a Federal Communications Commission policy on broadcasting indecency, saying that the regulations barring the use of fleeting expletives on the radio and television violated the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. This because they were vague and could inhibit free speech. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, has those details.
In a unanimous decision delivered on Tuesday, July 12th, the three-judge Circuit Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit in New York said that the FCC's current policy created what it called a chilling effect, one that goes far beyond the fleeting expletives at issue because it left broadcasters without a reliable guide to what the commission would find to be as offensive. The appeals court emphasized that it is not precluding federal regulation of broadcast standards. It specifically stated that it is not suggesting that the FCC could not create a policy that was constitutional, but that the regulatory agency's current policy failed on constitutional scrutiny. The stricter policy enacted by the FCC followed several instances that led to widespread public complaints. This included singer Janet Jackson's breast-bearing episode during the 2004 Super Bowl halftime show and repeated instances of on-the-air fleeting profanity by such celebrities as Cher, Paris Hilton, and Bono. This during live broadcasts of award programs. The Janet Jackson incident did not involve speech, but it drew wide public outrage that spurred the crackdown by the FCC. The decision against the FCC stems from a challenge filed by Fox, CBS, and other broadcasters to the agency's 2004 decision to begin enforcing the stricter standards for what kind of language was allowed on free over-the-air television. Prior to 2004, the FCC consistently held that occasional, spontaneous use of certain words that were otherwise prohibited did not violate its indecency standards. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, in the studio in the City of Angels, Los Angeles.
What effect this ruling might have on ham radio and other personal service cases involving indecent language broadcast over the airwaves is hard to assess. In years past, the FCC has applied